You're listening to episode 70 of the Mentoring Developers Podcast.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi there, dear listeners. I'm so excited to have you on the show once again at Mentoring Developers. I can tell you this episode is different. I say that a lot. It is different. All episodes are different to a degree, but this episode is really different because in this episode, I'm going to talk to Richard Cronick. He is somebody who wants to be a software developer. He's not quite a software developer yet. He has some skills. He's going to a code school, a code academy, and he doesn't have any experience. He has experience in life. He has some experience in some web development, some light web development using WordPress, which has some programming aspects to it, but it's not the same as getting a job as a programmer, as a software developer. So he wants to start his career and he needs guidance. So as part of my coaching program, I invited him to come on the show and let me coach him. Let me talk to him and find out the best path for him to choose to go from not having a software development career to getting his first job, to learning the right skills and the tools and technologies, and to just lay it out there for him in a way that he would understand, in a way that you would understand, as someone who is familiar with some parts of programming, some parts of technology, some part of what it makes, what it takes to be a software developer. Right? You know a little bit. And maybe you know a lot, but maybe you have some questions. Maybe you're not sure about something. There's so many options. What kind of languages should I learn? What tools, what frameworks? Where should I spend my time so that I can get my first job? Because you need the foot in the door. It's not easy. It's not easy. Nobody's there to mentor you. Nobody's there to teach you. Nobody's there to help you and give you the confidence that you need, that you can do this. So I'm here for you. So I have my coaching program and people contact me and I do professional coaching. And if you need some help in just getting ahead a little bit, or if you need some advice, you can book a time with me. So I did this coaching session with Richard and it went really well. I really enjoyed it, and I think that you will enjoy listening to it. So I want you to listen to it. I want you to take it in and give me your feedback. Let me know if this inspires you. If you have your own questions that you'd like answered, you can just send it to me. Send me your emails at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. You can also go to the website, mentoringdevelopers.com, and then sign up for an email list, and then you're on the list, and then you can send me your questions, you can send me your suggestions, your critiques, anything you like, and I'd be able to answer them directly. And I may be able to make a whole new episode for that, or I can answer you one-on-one, or if you like, we can do a coaching call. So without further delay, let's hear what happened when I coached Richard. And this is just the first part of that, but I really enjoyed it and I think he got a lot out of it, and I'm sure you will too. So stick around and listen in. Hi Richard, how are you?
Just fine. How are you, Arsalan?
Pretty good. All right, everybody. This is another episode of Mentoring Developers, and I'm talking to Richard about his career choices, and we're doing a little bit of counseling here. He really wants to do well in his fledgling software development career, and he's really passionate. He wants to know, but he has so many questions, as I'm sure that people who are listening and watching right now, you will have questions as well. And I would love to help. I'd love to help you. And Richard reached out to me, and I'm here trying to see what we can do to help him. So how are you feeling this week?
I'm all right. No complaints. I'm feeling as time goes by, things get clearer and clearer, which is always right. A nice feeling.
So what were your impressions after we had the first session last time, and you had the time to, you had to force yourself to think about this in a different way. And then there, you know, a couple of weeks have passed since then. So what happened in the meantime?
Well, in over the last couple of weeks, the biggest result of our last chat was that it really did direct my attention more to thinking about deciding exactly when I wanted certain things to be done. And when you spoke to me about what interests I had and what area of web development might be most suitable to me, it really sort of helped focus my thoughts in a direction which has resulted in a written down plan of attack, basically. So I know we planned on this meeting to sort of lay that out, but it sort of all kind of, it feels like it's all sort of fallen into place just from being forced to kind of take a serious look at it.
It's always a good idea to take a step back. If you're in the middle of something, right? You know, when you're in the middle of the forest, you can't really see the big picture. You don't know where in the scheme of things where you are. And it's the same for everybody. It happens to me a lot because I'm in the middle of something and I forget why I'm here and where I'm going. It's always important to know where you're going. It's like the lighthouse back in the day when you had, I think they still have lighthouses. And so if you're in the ship and you're like, I don't know which way to go, and you have this lighthouse, you know, if you follow that, you're going to get there. But along the way, you're going to have challenges. You're going to have minor goals and milestones. It's common sense, but only it seems common sense when somebody points it out to you and lays it out to you. You're like, oh yeah, of course I should have goals. And of course I should have mile markers and I should have milestones. It makes sense. But it's hard to do that when you're in the middle of it. You're stressed out. You have life issues. Some people have health issues. Some people have some technical problems. They happen to me all the time. When I have a big plan about how to, for instance, build my own software product, I said, okay, great. And then I think about all the technologies that I can use, and I pick one set of technology that I think is up and coming, or I think most appropriate, or I think I should know. Most of the time, this is the first time I have encountered that. I've read about it, but I have not really done it. So I go all in. I say, let's do it. So I'm thinking maybe I'll spend a couple of hours and get some features or something done. And then I install it, and I'm getting stuck because something doesn't work. Something fundamental doesn't work. You can't do Hello World because maybe the server is not configured properly, or maybe there's a library that's missing, and maybe this thing. And then you go on these forums and you go on Google and you try to figure out how to set it up, and you spend hours and hours and hours doing that, and you forgot why you were doing it in the first place. And that leads to frustration. So a good friend will tell you, you know, take a step back, get up from what you're doing. If you're sitting, get up. If you're standing, sit down. Take a nap, lie down, go for a walk, whatever you need to do to just take a step back and get out of that situation. And then visualize where you want to be. If you can do that, you know, you close your eyes, sort of meditate, that's fine. I like to have a piece of paper or a whiteboard where I'm just drawing random things and thinking about, I start with bubbles and boxes and where do I want to go. It clarifies things so much. So then, you know, you can compartmentalize what you need to do that particular moment. And sometimes maybe what you're trying to do is not that important. In my case, for instance, if I want to build a product, if my goal is to build a product, technology is not that critical. The choice of technology. I could use framework A, framework B, framework C. Framework C is the up and coming, the hot shot. It's what's going to be the dazzling stuff. If I can show it around, I can say, look how what I can do with this new technology that everybody's crazy about. But I'm not good at it. So now I have two challenges. I have to be good at it and I have to do a product. So I've created a very large problem for myself. But if I took a step back and I say, my goal was not with this exercise, my goal was not to learn this new technology. That's a fringe benefit, right? But that was not the goal. The goal was to build a product. So if I give myself 2 hours, what is the best way to do it? And maybe it's technology or framework A, the first one, because I've been working on it for several years. I know how to set it up. I'm not going to get bogged down with just the plumbing. I'm not going to get bogged down with this because I do it all the time. And that's something that a friend will tell you, a mentor will tell you. I will tell you again, if you're in this situation, listen to this podcast again and hear me say that. Take a step back. Find your goal. Once you have the goal, and remove all the fluff, and then I think it's easier. All right, so enough of that. And so what we need to do is we need to find a path for you. The most important thing before you go to the path, a lot of times I see people trying to figure out what they need to do today or what they say, okay, what kind of college should I go to? Or they say, what kind of books I should read? And they go immediately into that. What kind of frameworks or technologies I should invest my time in? They go into that, but they don't have a goal yet. So don't do that. Let's make a goal. So I think we settled on web development for you, right? That's what you're passionate about. That's what you want to do. And it's important to be passionate about programming. In programming, it's very important to be passionate about your choice of technologies, or let's take a step back. I shouldn't use the word technology here. You're passionate about your goal. You want to be a doctor, or you want to be a general physician, let's say. You need to know that I want to be a physician that works in my own private practice and so on. You need to know exactly, this is a place I need to get to. Then walk back towards, okay, for that type of job, perhaps I should go to this type of medical school and so on. Then you go from there. In your case, I should not have used the word technology. I get into that trap myself. I shouldn't have said that. What you need to do is to figure out, okay, I want to be a web developer who can build modern web apps that are responsive. Responsive apps are simply apps that behave or they look differently based on the type of screen that you run them on. That's because that has a certain application. If you're on a tablet or a phone, or if you're on a desktop computer, it will just scale and it will just resize itself and shift things around to make them look nice. That's a certain ethos. I think that's important to know that this is where you want to go. And if you wanted to do that, and if you wanted to build a modern app that is like a single page type app, it's an idea. I mean, you don't have to say I'm only going to do single page apps, but I think you should focus when you're making goals. And then you can deviate from it a little bit here and there, but you should focus. And I think that's if you wanted to do that, that's one approach. That's almost a different type of goal than to say a developer who builds web applications for large companies, for enterprises, for business needs, critical business needs. That in a lot of cases, when you have a large business or when you have an important business, maybe you have a factory. It's not a large business, but it's critical that what you do works and only the people working inside the factory will see it, that's a different goal, in my opinion. Because not only that, the product that you're going to build for them will be different, fundamentally different, than what you will build for something like a Facebook, right? It will be a completely different animal. But not only that, it will be different, but the process to make it will be different. The process to change it will be different. Your daily activities, what you do for on a day-to-day basis when you get into work, will be different. What you do on the weekends will be different. Everything will change based on your goal. And so, and then there are other types of applications. So there's one extreme, which is the very, very kind of public web technologies, web services, or websites that are in the public domain and everybody knows it. And so that type of work. And then there's the enterprise type of work, or more closed type of work, which is essentially internal applications that are critical for business, but they're only going to be used by that business. And there's something in the middle, which is a little bit of this, a little bit of that. A lot of times governments have that, state governments and county governments, or federal governments and so on, may have certain needs and certain websites or certain software that other people can interact with a little bit, but a little bit of it is internal. It's important, but it goes in a different pace. So if you can imagine yourself working for 5 years in a company that is making public-facing websites, and that's what you're primarily doing, and then somebody's working in for the state of Nebraska in their IT department, or somebody is working for Berkshire Hathaway or whatever, you know, I'm dropping names. I know these are all
Omaha's known for.
Omaha companies. So there's all those places where they're maybe making investments and creating reports for all the different kinds of stock activity and whatever else they do. Those are not public. Those are internal, but they're critical. Your lifestyle in each of these positions will be different. And that's why I harp on about goals. So what you need to know is, as a family man, you have a family. You have to decide what kind of outcome you want for yourself, right? And that's a hard question, because obviously you don't know, you haven't experienced it. But I can tell you from my experience, if you wanted a 9-to-5 job that is steady, that is less about programming, but more about, you know, the structure, the environment, and you just go in there, do whatever needs to be done, and you may or may not be coding all the time, or you may be coding sometimes, you may be doing whatever technology, it may be something you like, or it doesn't, because that's not your focus. Your focus is to get a good job that has good health benefits, that has good vacation time, right? That's you're not going to get easily fired from. It's something that you can count on, you depend on. You know, that's a very attractive option for some people. That will be something like something in the government, maybe in a university. Those are the types of jobs that you can get. And that's, I'm not going to knock on that. That's great. The problem with that is they're not going to pay so much. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for some people, that's not an issue. So that's one. The other is you can work on sort of proprietary technologies, or you can work on these internal applications. And I've seen companies, for instance, there's a factory. It's a very small company, maybe a few dozen people. But they have a computer that runs the factory floor, and they need to build something that can keep track of what's coming, what's going, and it's critical. If it breaks, they're going to lose money, because a factory needs to keep going 24/7, and a breakage in their production line costs them a lot of money. So for that, because it is a critical piece, they're willing to pay a lot of money. So it'll be a lot more than a government job or a university job. But the technologies are going to be very, very different. You know, you would probably not be very happy with the technologies. That's been my experience. Every time I've been to a place and I'm new to a city and I'm thinking of, okay, what kind of jobs I can get? I've had those interviews where I'd go in and I know this is what's happening, but they need me to build a Windows client application, essentially a native Windows application, which is something I could totally do, but then I will not be doing web development. Because they don't need web developers. They don't actually want it. They want a stateful system where an application that you install on a computer itself does not need to connect to the internet. There is no server. You know, there's no client service going on. It's a self-contained unit. And it does not need to contact other outside of its little world, right? So that's very good. The pay is decent. And the work hours, then again, you'd have these two issues where it will be like a 9-to-5 job. I shouldn't really call it 9-to-5 because in factory type situation or other types of work environments, they may have different unorthodox hours. It's possible that they work different weird hours, but the hours will be fixed for sure, right? Unless they make you do overtime, which can happen anywhere. But normally, you would just be working fixed hours, whatever those hours are. But of course, those types of jobs, they're very important. They're critical, which means if something goes wrong, then it could be in the middle of the night or whatever. You're on the hook for that. That's a pretty common thing, by the way. If you're listening right now to this, if somebody, I'm thinking about the listeners, who have, you know, they want to be developers and they want to do this. But keep this in mind. If you're working on an application, a piece of software that is in production, which means people are actively using it, and it's a very important piece of software where people's lives depend on it or money is being lost while something is wrong, then you're probably going to have to support it through being on call a lot. And sometimes that means getting a call in the middle of the night and then getting on the computer and trying to fix it. Or in extreme cases, driving to work in the middle of the night and trying to fix it. And those are sometimes you can't avoid it. So then you have to think about this. Then the third type of job, obviously, is a different type of company that is maybe a smart startup company or maybe a different type of company that is doing work that they are trying to sell to consumers or maybe to other businesses, but essentially to the general public. And there are two problems here. One is you may, for instance, you can get a job at Yahoo and you can say, well, Yahoo is a public facing website. And you'll find that a vast majority of programming jobs there are not public facing, right? Very few people actually work on the Yahoo or the Facebook website. Because it's not just a website, it seems simpler to an outsider. Like if I came from the Amazon jungle and I knew some programming and somebody showed me the Google homepage, I'll be like, that's easy. That's just one text box and one button. And then you click a button and it does a search. You know, I can do that on a weekend, right? It seems easy. But the reality is that Google website is a behemoth. It's a monster. It probably takes hundreds of developers to build just that website, right? Because most of the work is behind the scenes. We don't see that. And so that's what you end up doing. I know people who work in these companies and then they don't ever touch the public-facing part of the system, right? They're over there. They're maybe one of thousands of developers that are just working on this little piece. And maybe there is no actual web page. Maybe all they're doing is, writing reports, or maybe they're They're building this very small feature in the overall billing system. It's a very small feature. It's important. But when you're in the middle of it, you might as well be working for a different company, right? So we have to understand where we want to go. What I like for you to do, Richard, instead of saying that I'm going to only work on web technologies that are of this nature, or I'm going to work on native technologies that I don't have to worry about state management in the web world like this, or I want to work at I want to build this type of software. That's not a bad way of looking at it, but there's a problem with that. Is first of all, that changes, right? That changes from one era to another. In 10 years from now, maybe the world would have changed so much that these choices would make no sense. The second thing is that companies themselves, they evolve and they pick up different technologies. Instead of, what I want you to do is to look at three different segments that I just highlighted for you and see, where do you see yourself working in one of these, which of these sets of companies or industries or sub industries do you feel excited about? Right? And I don't, you're the only one who can answer that.
Well, so none of the three that you mentioned repulsed me, which is good. I think I mentioned last time on our podcast that for the past 3 or so years, I've been running a WordPress website development company, and there's no 9-to-5 when you're doing that. I haven't done 9-to-5 in a long time, and I like that. What I do is pretty much always on my mind, and maybe that makes me a workaholic and stuff. I try my best to stay balanced and always have time for what's most important in life, but I can't help but think about what I do most of the time. And so, I suppose that I probably most naturally fit into the third option that you mentioned, but I going to work 9-to-5, coming home and continuing working is probably something I would do if I ended up in the 9-to-5 position, just because, the reason I started doing what I did 3 years ago, building websites with WordPress, was because I couldn't get it out of my mind. I was fascinated with it, and when I started to see results, it just became more exciting. And as I started to look under the hood a little bit at what was going on behind the scenes, that's what has attracted my attention. The actual code behind the scenes, and that's why I've tried to sort of pursue it myself. So, I guess I probably personally resonate most with the third option that you mentioned. But I ideally, what I just want to be able to do is to use my skills and abilities to help solve problems. And that's what it, to me, it really seems like software development. It's a lot of problem solving, and I like that, and it's fun. I feel like I could be adaptive to most any situation, as long as the goal is to either produce or maintain or improve something of value, something that serves.
Well, I have good news for you.
What's that?
Any software job you'll ever get, you will get to solve problems with software. That's a given. So that's good. That's good that you want to do that. And the other thing is, I forgot to mention one other avenue or one other goal, although I don't think it's applicable to you, is going independent, just solving people's problems as your own company. You don't need a job, right? But if you're starting out, I would recommend you get a job so that you learn best practices. You learn from other people and not have to figure everything out yourself. And one other thing about the other sets of sub-industries, like the one in the government and university and the other ones in closed shops and enterprises, a lot of times you're on your own. A lot of times, especially if you're working in a factory environment where you are the programmer, right? They have an IT guy who takes care of the network and makes the computers running, and you have a programmer and you're the programmer, which means it can get lonely, first of all. Also, the problem that I see a problem with, especially people who are just starting out, is you have no opportunity to learn from anybody, right? And so how would you know best practices? How would you know what's a good way of approaching a problem? The other thing is everything is on you. So if anything goes wrong, then you're on the hook. So it's more stressful. So that's another thing. What I'd recommend for you is get a job where, or look for a job in a company where the people are really smart and humble. So you'll find a lot of places where there are lots of smart people, but they're pretty arrogant, and it's an ego thing for them. And if you fit in a certain profile, if you're like them, and if you're good buddies with them, maybe it's okay. Otherwise, you'll get cold shoulder. Really, I've seen some really weird behavior. But at times it's great because there are people who are down to earth and they don't have any pretensions, right? They're good, they're hardworking, but you know they don't play politics. And again, it's a very hard thing to judge as you're interviewing people. But that's something that you can do if it's easygoing and then you feel like these people are not uptight, then I think you'll have a better chance, because your goal right now is not to get your perfect job, because it's almost impossible for you to get a perfect job. No matter how much you study, no matter how well you are at programming, no matter how good you are at doing interviews, because you're starting out, right? When you're starting out, your goal should not be to get your perfect job. Your goal should be to set yourself up. And this is what I tell everybody. Your first goal or for your first job should be to put you in a state where you can get your second job. Your first job, the entire purpose of getting that and keeping that job is so you can get your second job, where hopefully that is going to lead you into the right place. Maybe that's still not your ideal job, but it's taking you in that direction. What you need right now is a place that will allow you to just absorb, learn. They'll allow you to understand business practices, understand the behind-the-scenes work of software, understand software development methodology. This is a pretty heavy word that people throw around. It's basically how you build software. And unfortunately, we don't have a standard, and most companies, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that most companies don't follow anything. Right? It's called seat of the pants. That's what we do. This is our development methodology. They say it. They claim. A lot of companies would claim they do agile, which is a very buzzword people like to throw around. But they are absolutely not agile. And agile development is a fascinating area of learning. You can spend a lot of time learning about agile. But basically, it's a structured and a way of developing software where you have an eye, you're coding, you're building your software, but you have one eye out for the big picture. You're one eye out for what's really needed, what's really important, right? So you're talking to your customers all the time, where you're thinking about how this thing that you're working on fits in with the larger picture. That's what it is. That's what agile is. It is not necessarily TDD, test-driven development, which is you write the test as sort of like the prototype, or not assurance of the prototype. You write the test, that test describes what your feature should do, right? As you're building new features, as you're writing new methods, and you're adding more and more stuff, before you do it, you think about what it's supposed to do. That's what it is. That's what test-driven development is. It's not about the actual test. It's not about getting code coverage. That's another thing people say, and I keep throwing new terms, and I have to remind myself to explain them. So a code coverage is just a way for us to know when you're writing a test, an automated test, where you're, when you can run a piece of code that can test the code that you really want to write, right? So a test code that tests, or by test I mean it proves that it works appropriately. This thing that you are building, this important piece of software, and this little thing on the side, that's testing it. So a code coverage number will tell you when you run your test, how much, what is the percentage of your entire code base that you've tested? And how do they know? They keep track of every line that is hit in those unit tests. And if you've hit 70 out of 100, then you have a 70% code coverage. So code coverage is a number, like people like to push it to 100. Some people have these rules that you cannot submit code, or you cannot check in code into a repository until it has 80% coverage or whatever. That's another thing. I don't agree with that necessarily, because sometimes it makes sense to write a lot of tests, sometimes it doesn't. But nevertheless, that's what you'll find when you're out there looking for work. This is what you'll find. A lot of people believe that's agile, and that's good to learn. It's good for you to go to be out there and experimenting with things. But you end up learning bad habits, and there's nothing you can do about this. Okay. So the bottom line is, your goal is to learn, and that's all that you can do. If you can get a job and be there for 1 year, and a job where you're working with other senior people, people that are down to earth, that are knowledgeable themselves, and hopefully doing something worthwhile, right? If you're an intern and all you're doing is making Excel reports, it's still better than nothing, because you may still get a chance to talk to people and at least look at code. But you try to get the best, the most attractive work that you can find. But more than the work itself for your first job, it's the people that you work with. Right? Because you can learn so much so quickly with people. I've seen developers who just find themselves, they're lucky and they find themselves in the company of really amazing developers. And they develop by leaps and bounds. They're so far ahead of everybody else. Within 2 years, they're giving conference talks. I've seen that. And in some places, people work for 10, 20 years and they don't know much at all. Right, they just some people like to say this, like they have their first year of development, they just repeat it 10 times. That can happen. Don't be that guy. So what I'd say is that it seems to me that what you need something that's a little bit challenging for you. And so a lot of the corporate jobs, most of the jobs in the Midwest, that's my assessment. I could be wrong about this, but in the Midwest where you are, most of the jobs are corporate jobs, or the first and second category, not the third category. These types of companies, they exist, but they tend to be very small startup companies. They're making products and they're pushing things and maybe presenting something to the customer. So for somebody who really wants to be in this third sub-industry, you may want to be flexible so that if it's in Chicago, you could say yes. And in your case, I'm not saying that you have to do it, but in general, you should be able to say yes to a job that is in a location that you weren't thinking about. New York, yes. Because remember, this is not your dream job. It's not supposed to be your dream job. It's not supposed to be your perfect, you know, perfect place that you just go in and build a nest around it, and then you can stay there for 20 years and retire. That's not your goal. Your goal is to get a job which will help you get your second job. So if it's in New York and you have no interest in living in New York, but it's a good job and the work is good and the people are great, then if you can, then I'd say go take the job, do it for a year, and just work hard and build yourself a portfolio of things that you have done. Understand the business. Understand the business process. Understand software development methodologies. Understand whatever you can understand from that environment. Just soak everything up. And now with 1 year of experience, believe it or not, 1 year of experience is enough to get you a much better job in a much better location. You may be able to, for instance, in your case, let's say you worked in New York for a year on something, let's pick a technology, Angular with Java or Angular with Python backend, something like this. And you worked on the financial, maybe for a hedge fund, I don't know, something related to stocks. And then with that experience and with this intense experience, hopefully that's what you get, you can probably find a job in Omaha for somebody that needs this type of expertise, but they couldn't find it. They're not going to teach you because they don't know how to teach you. This is another problem with our industry, is we don't have mentorship programs. We don't have a system where you can bring in a new person and sort of teach them the ropes and help them grow and help them become part of the team. We don't do that. Every other industry does that. Every other industry in the world, this is what happens, right? But in our industry, you know, we want somebody who already knows everything, because we don't have the time. We don't have the skills. We don't have any interest in sort of graduating you, right? So, but if you had 1 year of experience, you might be able to get into the company that you really wanted to get into. Maybe it's close to home and so on. So that's something that you should really be open to if you can. If you have a family, you have kids and they're going to school and so on. I mean, if you can't do it, then you can't do it. Then that's not for you. Okay. So then what we need to do is we need to look at lifestyle. Are you able to put in a ridiculous number of hours doing the work and then going home and doing more work? That's a question.
I already do.
Okay.
I already do.
But yeah. You do that right now. But are you going to give that up for this new thing that you're learning? Because if you want to be a WordPress developer, that's a very lucrative career in its own. It probably doesn't pay as much as some of the other things. But WordPress work is expanding. It's exploding. There's so much work for WordPress developers. So that's a career on its own. But if you wanted to, let's say, work at a company, they're doing Python, and they're doing big data analysis, or maybe it's a financial services company and they do mortgages. You know, they're doing all kinds of financial calculations, and you working with quants, which I learned that's what they're called, the people who do the math. And or maybe you're working in healthcare. You're working at a company that's doing medical records. That could be exciting for you. That could be really rewarding for you. But you probably have to give up working on WordPress for that, because you only have so much time.
Well, so I'm not sure if I mentioned it, but I actually don't really spend any time on my business anymore. About 5-6 months ago, I trained someone to basically do everything that I was doing. Now I spend all of my time learning software development. So okay. That's what I meant. I spend all my time working on that right now. All right,
so you will be able to devote it. That's perfect. That's great. So the next thing is, what you want to do is you want to work in the web. So we have established you want to work in the web. You want to work in a challenging position, not necessarily 9-to-5. One of the benefits of doing that is that you can Once you learn the skills, once you've done through the grind, once you've spent, I'd say, 2 years, and with your entrepreneurial background, there's nothing stopping you from just, you know, getting your own clients and not have to work. You could totally do that, but you need to do the time. You know, you need to do. It's like a jail for people who like to be independent, to have to work in a company and have to have a boss and all the constraints that go with that. But it's time. When you do that time, you come out and you have all the tools now. So that's pretty exciting for somebody like you who already knows how to run a business. That's good. So now let me ask that other uncomfortable question. Are you in a position where you could relocate for a year for a job?
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's great.
Because my wife is from the Philippines and we have family in 4 different countries, 2 different continents, I started years ago trying to basically make us as mobile as possible. And that's one of the things that led to the business. I mean, I used to run the business from my laptop and it's still completely mobile. We're very flexible. My wife and I are, we enjoy moving and traveling. We spent quite a few years overseas, so we're happy to see, you know, jump into a new environment.
That's great. Yeah, my wife is exactly the opposite. So, yeah, she does not like to move, and I've made her move over the years. I never hear the end of it. So that's great. That's wonderful. Because that gives you options. When you're in a small city, even if you're in a big city, but by deciding that you don't want to move for the culture, for the food or the family, you're limiting your career options. I think initially you should really, really give yourself the best chance of success, because it's like a train, right? It's slow to start. So you need as much push as you can give it. Just slow to start. Once it starts, it's easy to keep going. So you've opened up, just by being flexible, you've opened up a lot of options for you. Because I can tell you that there are a lot of companies that are looking for people, maybe with limited experience, and they just can't find enough people in the local environment. And there are some remote working jobs as well. That's something that has to be mentioned, because they exist where you can work from home. But I do not recommend it for new developers, because the whole point of it is that you need to be in an environment where you learn. You can't really learn when you're at home. You can, but you can't learn the processes. You can't learn, for instance, business. You can't learn it when you're isolated. So that's wonderful. Now, in terms of industries, do you care about any industry, or there is something that particularly you hate it, that you never want to do? I never want to be in this industry, or, you know, in terms of the type of business. Or you can say, I really, really love it. I wish I could just do it. The reason I say that, I think it's important to mention why I ask this question, is because if you are super excited about something, more than anything else, then you are going to put in the crazy effort that's needed. Also, if you absolutely hate something, then there's no point going in there. Over to you.
I probably haven't given your question enough thought yet, but having spent over a decade in education, I mean, that's one area that I resonate with a lot, just educating and sort of helping the next generation of people in general. I suppose anything that I would absolutely not want to do, I guess, would be something where it was the business was deceitful, or where it wasn't creating value, where it was taking away rather than giving. I mean, that I wouldn't want to be a part of. I would like to be of something that is increasing and growing, improving life rather than taking away. So that would be, I think, the big no-no for me, something like that. I think it's important to be of use, be of service. So
in other words, you don't want to work for hedge funds. Just say
probably not.
just a joke. No. Yeah, no. Because a lot of times there are some businesses that just are in the business of making money out of nothing, and sometimes that's, you know, you maybe it's not so fulfilling as somebody who's building software for K-12 and helping teachers achieve success, or, you know, lots of. But the problem with those, here's the problem, and something you have to reconcile, is that a lot of these jobs and careers that are high causes, right? They feel good. They feel good to be able to do it. They don't pay much. Sometimes they pay enough, but sometimes, I mean, for sure, they don't pay as much as other things that it may not be as pure or as satisfying. And that's totally fine. I personally want my life to be meaningful, right? I want to contribute to society just like you do. I want my life to mean something, right? It's very important for us. We're not just living for money. At the same time, money is important because it lets us do things that we want to do, and it lets us be charitable in other ways. So that's a very important decision that now you have to make. What matters more to you, right? Mm-hmm. So not something that you have to answer right now, but something to think about. I think in a way, for your first job, it almost doesn't matter what type of sub-industry or type of business they're in, if I'm being honest. Because as I said, the first job is not your goal, not your big goal, not your end goal. The first job is just a way for you to get a second job. And if that's true, then the first job, if it's in something that you don't want to do necessarily, that's still okay, right? Ideally, it would be, you know, if you want to make games, if you want to, you know, build you work for Electronic Arts and build games, or, you know, just like that 3D gaming stuff, and you just spend all the time doing it. If you are one of those people, then, you know, maybe you should start there, because then if you're working at a financial firm, then you're not learning the business process that you need to learn. The problem is our software industry is so fragmented. Then building a game is a lot different than creating regulatory reports, you know, for the government. It's a different way of doing things. So for that, in those extreme cases, I'm going to say, try to get the job as close to your goal as possible. But if you're more of a generalist, then what you need to do is to work at companies where you can learn and grow. Okay. And I think, so the question for you is, what are those companies? So what we need to do now is to make a profile for those companies.
Well, so there's one thing that's very important to me. I don't want to work at a place where they expect you to know everything. I'd like to work at a place where they expect you to be willing to learn. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to be working at a place where people it's understood that there's so much to learn in our field, and that you won't be a master of everything, but a culture where people will help each other out and understand that you know, sometimes we have to learn some things, but if you're willing to learn, then, you know, with the right atmosphere, with the right people, with people who are going to help you, rather than an atmosphere where you have to pretend you know everything while you're trying to learn everything on the side. It's hard to succeed, I think, in an atmosphere where you have to be like that. So for me, one thing that's really important is sort of this understanding or recognition that we're all learning. And even the most experienced developer has plenty to learn, I would think.
Yeah, we're all constantly learning, but we never like to admit that. Now, that's a dirty secret here. We all pretend. You know, I like to not pretend. I like to be brutally honest. If I don't know something, I go and say, I have no idea. I can figure it out. Let's do that. But if I don't know, I don't know, because there's no shame in not knowing. But what I've noticed is that it doesn't work. In corporate America, you pretend. Everybody pretends. And if you don't pretend, then you end up being looked down upon, right? Where people think, oh, he's not important. And that's another thing that I've noticed. There's a lot of politics in software companies. And you wouldn't expect that, because generally they're younger people, and, you know, why would there be politics in a software company? Or company that is, or a department within a company that is focused on software? It feels wrong, because nobody from, you know, not a lot of developers are going to become CTOs or CEOs. So there's, you know, stepping on top of each other makes very little sense, but it happens. It's human behavior, unfortunately. So you'll end up in situations where people like to project that they know a lot and they're pretty good, mm-hmm. right? And that's just very few places. You will find places where this will not be the case. And I hope you find a job in those places. And maybe for your second or your third job, you should really keep a lookout for those types of places. But for your first job, that may be a little unrealistic, an expectation. But it's good to know. That's where you stand. So, if a company is advertising for a junior developer position, then they really should expect that you don't know. Right?
Yeah.
If they're advertising for a junior developer position, they're still... If you look at their job, that's another thing that's really funny. If you look at the job listing, it'll still show 1,000 things in there. You must know this, you must know that, you must do this, and you must have done 2 years of this. And by the way, it's a junior developer position. Makes no sense. A lot of times it's like a wish list. They don't really expect anybody to have that. Or maybe it's a way to filter out candidates. It's a way to scare off people. Right? It's like, I got a gun. And somebody's trying to, there's a mob coming to my house, and I have a gun. I'm saying, I have a gun. So I'm hoping that most of them will run away. The fact that I'm, you know, I don't have any intention of using that gun, it's probably the wrong example to give. It's probably a pretty bad
makes
example.
Sense.
But the point makes is sense. That it's a threat. It's a threat that I will not let you in through this gate unless you have these 20 things. And they're hoping that most people will say, oh man, I can't do it. And then so that they don't have to deal with all those people. So then they only have 5 resumes, 10 resumes, a job, and then they can go through it. So if you are able to contact the hiring manager, remember, not the recruiter, because when you see a job opening, a lot of times, this is really bad, but a lot of times, these are third-party companies, other companies that are trying to be the recruiter or trying to get you into a company, and that's how they make a lot of their money. That's their business model. But they're not the actual hiring managers. They're not the people who need you. So they don't really know anything about the company. They know very little. They don't know anything about you. They don't care about any of this. All they're trying to do is to get you to agree to work with them and only with them, so that now they can sell you to the company. You become the product. And so they want to sign an agreement where you will never be able to, or not be able to, maybe go directly to the company. Okay, so don't fall for that. at least if you can help it. Initially, don't try to stay away from a company that's, we call them body shops, right? Don't go for body shops. Try to go to the company directly. Find out where the job is, right? A lot of times you'll go see a job listing and will not mention the company. And you think, oh, the name of the company, the company that's posting the job has a job. But no, they're just trying to place you somewhere. But the actual company where the job exists, you have no idea where it is. So maybe sometimes you can do some Google searches to figure out, try to be a little detective and figure out where the job is actually. Sometimes you'll find jobs posted with the actual hiring companies. You really should try your best to find the company where the job is. Then try to figure out which department it's in. Who's the person? Who's a manager that's really hurting right now? Because the only reason they're advertising for this job, most likely, is because there's a really big problem that they need to solve right now. It's not because they need five people in the department. There's a problem. And they're under stress. And they really want to fix it. They want somebody to come in right away. And so, okay, what do? Then they go and talk to their HR department and they place an ad, or maybe they talk to the special vendors. These companies have special agreements with them to give them candidates because they don't have the time to go look for the candidates themselves. And so they blast these job sites with all of these ads. And so there could be five different companies advertising for the same job. None of them actually have any idea what the job is about. It's just copy pasting. And so what you need to do is find out what the company is, who the hiring manager is. Go to LinkedIn, do a little search, find out what they're about. What are the things they're passionate about? Where do they hang out? Maybe you know them already, or maybe you know somebody who knows them. So when you get all this information, when you figure out what this company is, then maybe it's in your neighborhood and you just knock on the door one day. I've done that. You just ring the bell, say, hey, I just wanted to see what you guys are doing. Maybe they're friendly enough, they'll let you in and say, yeah, come on and meet us. And if they really have a need, they can say, yeah, so what do you do again? I say, yeah, I'm a developer, I've been doing this, and I'm really looking to see if you need somebody with my skills that I can really help you guys. And if they're free and they have a need, they may say, sure, why don't you sit in the meeting room and I'll see if we can find somebody. You can get the process started. Maybe, possibly. If not, you could email them. If not, you could call them. But if all else fails, you have to use a recruiting company or a placement company, sure. But at least you'll have an idea of what they want. When you know what they want, and I don't want you to lie. A lot of people will say, just make your resume reflect everything that the job wants. If you know it, if you don't know it, don't worry about it. Just put it in, because your job is to, because the resume is just like the reason to get your first job is to get your second job. That's the reason. You know, your first job is not to launch your career. The first job is to get your second job. The reason for your resume is not to get you a job. The reason to have a resume is to get an interview. That's all. Once you're doing the interview, then the resume kind of doesn't even matter. So that's true, but I would not want you to lie in your resume. It's a very common practice. People lie all the time. You don't need to lie. You just need to give the reader who's looking at your resume the information that they need and take out the fluff. You may have done 1,000 things in life. And you may have, for instance, a lot of experience in WordPress. But if this job has nothing to do with WordPress, that's a detail you should reduce or omit. Because it's a distraction. You're not lying by omitting that. If they ask you, you can tell them, yes, this is what I do as well. But if the job is, let's say it's a job that requires JavaScript and CSS, because they're going to be building these custom websites and they want somebody to go in there and make these modifications which will make the UI look, the user interface look very nice. And for that, they have decided they're going to use CSS, JavaScript, and a framework. Let's say they want to use the React framework. That's what they want to use for various reasons. So if you don't have any React experience, you shouldn't say that you do. You shouldn't lie about it.
Because then you'd have to pretend that you do if you get the job.
A lot of times people do that. And I'm not saying that if you lied about it and if you put all the technologies in your resume, that you will never get the job. That's, I'm not saying people get jobs like this all the time and they make up stories. Sure. You can make up a story. You can say, yes, I did this job. I worked on React, this thing, and I made the, unless they make you write code in front of them, they don't know. It's just a matter of ethics, is being a good person. I believe it's important that you're true to yourself. You should not, because lying is like admitting that there's something wrong with you, that you're not good enough. That's really not a good place to be. You are good enough. You have what it takes, not only to succeed, but to help this company. This company needs you as a candidate. You don't need them. They need you. You need to have the self-belief. You're good enough. And you can't have that if you're lying, because obviously that means you don't think you're good enough. So I want you to be truthful. In that case, let's look at an example. Let's say it's a job that requires React, but you have never done it. So but you've done JavaScript, you've done CSS, but you've not done React. You have two options. You can say, you can just show up, go to there, and then say, hopefully you get the interview. Then you say, you know, I have not done React. I've looked at it and I've read about it. And you know what it does? I can tell you a few things about it. This is what it does. And it's a framework for building single page applications. And it has a very interesting view of the DOM. It does certain things in a certain unique way, which is why people are picking it up. I know that. But I have not had a chance to work in it. But I know that I can pick it up. How do I know I can pick it up? Because I've picked up JavaScript. And I can do these five things. And if I know that if I know JavaScript, React is built on top of JavaScript, right? React uses JavaScript, just a certain brand of it, right? It has certain idiosyncrasies, sure. But, you know, I can learn that. I can learn that in a couple of weekends. I'm pretty sure that if I got this job, I'll be pretty good at it. And there's so much more to a job in software development than just the technology itself. I know the business processes. I know this methodology. I know test-driven development, for instance. And you can make a case for yourself. Not because you're trying to sweet-talk people into getting a job. You actually believe that you have what it takes. You believe in yourself first. Then that's one approach. That's one of the two approaches I recommend. Another approach, an even better approach, is that you say, okay, this company works with React. I want to get this job, but I'm not ready yet. Let me go and set a timeline for 6 months later. I'm going to apply for this job. I'm going to get it. In those 6 months, I'm going to do two React projects to showcase what I can do. Not only that, maybe these are projects that I can do at work, my current job. If not, I'm going to go and put them on the... First of all, I'm going to make these React projects, but not just to-do lists and random Hello World projects, but something useful. I'm going to make it. I'm going to put the software, the code itself, on GitHub, which is a shared repository, so it's a public place where people can see what you're doing. And they can not only see what you have produced, but the progression, like every week, every day, what you throw there, so they can track it. So you have been working, you're not lying, first of all. So you put those projects in there, and then you deploy them to a public website, maybe your own domain, or maybe a different place where you can set up your own. For instance, I have a little server box, a virtual server that I rent, and I put all of my websites there. I don't need to pay, you know, a hefty subscription for every website that I want to run, for instance. I can run 20 on them because the traffic is not so much. And if the traffic becomes a problem, I can, because it's a virtual environment, I can I can make it, turn this into a bigger machine, and hopefully that'll still be enough. So you could just go and you can get rent one of those from one of various companies that do that, and that you can start making websites, starting putting them online, you know. And then your job is to get that in 6 months. So for the next 6 months, your task is to do these projects. They go onto your resume. You don't have to say that you did it for a client. You can say personal projects. Make a heading called personal projects. Put it in there. Give as much detail as possible the important things. The things that you learned, the things that you accomplished. Maybe if you had telemetry, like how many users use it and so on. Anything that you can do to not only to show that you know React, but you know how it's being used and you know a little bit about software development. And then you already know the company that you want to work at. Then you can do a little sleuthing to figure out where they hang out. Maybe there is a user group that they're always at, right? Maybe it's a React user group in your neighborhood. Just go there and see if you can meet them. See if you can meet as many other people as you want. And then you don't have to start selling yourself. You can just be friends with them. And then if they know you already, if they know your name, if they know a little bit about you, and maybe you, as you're working on React, maybe you have an idea on giving a talk, maybe a lightning talk. Or maybe if you don't feel comfortable doing that, maybe you can write a blog post and share it in the group. Hey, you know, I wrote the blog post. You can do that. Even if you don't share, even if you just have it on GitHub and your blog and your videos on YouTube, whatever you're doing, then when the time comes, the 6 months pass and you need to apply, you don't have to go to a third-party body shopper, a body shop company. You go directly to the company and say, you know, I noticed that you're working with React and I've been working on React for 6 months and I really enjoy it. And I think I can be very good at this company, at your company. And if you want to take a look at my portfolio and just have a chat with me, I'd love it. You know, I'll buy you dinner. Or I'll buy coffee, whatever. And they, if they're friendly enough, they might say, yeah, let's talk about it. You can buy them lunch, or you can buy them coffee, or, you know, they might say, no, let's talk to the HR and whatever. They should, in this case, most likely talk to you. And that's where you can go present yourself. Be honest, be straightforward. Not because I like to be honest for ethical reasons. But there's also practical reasons. When you're honest, you believe in yourself. If you believe in yourself, Richard, they're going to believe in you. And that's how you get a job. That's how you get a good job. Not filling resumes, filling up with all sets of technologies, not blasting out to 100 people. That's not how you get a good job, in my opinion. What do you think?
I agree with you. I think... Many jobs are not found through these job advertisement websites. I'm sure some are, but I think I found very few jobs in my life through that way. It's about just being real, being yourself, and you know, getting to know people. If you're a human face to someone, it goes a lot further than details on a page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. I didn't want to stop in the middle of this consultation. We've gone way over, but I think it's important that we went through some of these topics that, you know, for you and for anybody who's listening and for myself to just be able to say it. So now I think we have covered a lot of ground. We know what type of jobs you want. We have a strategy of how to get a job, and now, your original question was, what type of technologies should I learn and what should I learn? And I turned it around into this big quest for a goal and then milestones. You know, it seems too wishy-washy, but I think we're getting there. So if you're up for it, we can continue this next time and then we can go a little bit deeper on your choices of technologies and so on. What do you think?
Sounds great.
Sounds awesome.
I'm up for it.
All right. And yeah, I know you've been feeling sick last couple of days, and I'm hoping that you'll feel better next time, you know, with a lot of positive energy. And by talking to you and giving you advice and doing a consultation with you is giving me energy.
Good. That's nice to hear. Yeah. All right. It was just a small cold. I'll be just fine. Thank you, man.
Awesome. Okay. So we're going to schedule you for another one of these consultation counseling sessions. And if you're somebody who is listening right now and is thinking, you know, that's pretty good, I wish I could get a counseling session with Arslan. If you want, just let me know. And you can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. I'll see what I can do. If I have time, we'll go online and we'll record a session. If not, then maybe I'll just answer your emails. And I'd love to hear comments. I'd love to hear how the show is helping you. If it is helping you, and if you want to see something different, that's great. There's also a mailing list on the website, mentoringdevelopers.com, where you can sign up and you're going to get to 5 Steps to Success, that email course, and that Richard, you've been going through. Mm-hmm. How was your experience reading those emails?
It's great. It was, I think they came about once a week, and it's nice because my impression is that the goal of your emails are to help us look at the big picture, see things from the big picture in the grand scheme of things. So it's very motivating and encouraging. I highly recommend.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Basically, what I do is I take a step back and I put myself in your position. Because when I was starting out, I was really struggling. Nobody was helping me. And there was nobody that I could ask for help. I absolutely struggled. In spite of the fact that I've always been wanting to do programming. Since I was a kid, that's all I wanted to do. I wanted to be a programmer. And I wanted to work with computers. Right? I wanted to build games. That never happened. But, you know, close enough. I got to
still time.
So in spite of spending so much time, in spite of going to college, in spite of learning this and being dedicated to this, I still struggled. So I was thinking about all those people who didn't have that background. So I don't want you to struggle. So that's what I'm doing. And I feel like there's not enough empathy in our industry. So hopefully by listening or watching to this podcast, by going through the emails and emailing me and getting feedback, hopefully that it makes this world a little better. That's hope. That's the hope.
I think so.
All right. Yep. Okay, so we're going to stop now, and hopefully we'll see you in the next episode, and I'll see you, Richard, very soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Arslan.
Hi, folks. It's really good to know that you made it to the end of this episode. Did you enjoy listening to it? Did you have any questions that you wanted to ask or maybe some suggestions? Fire me an email at us@mentoringdevelopers.com and I'll see to it that it gets responded. Also, go ahead and sign up for the email list if you have not done that already. Go to mentoringdevelopers.com and you'll be able to sign up for email list. And once you do, I'll send you my 5 Steps to Success as a Software Developer and also send you information about salary negotiations and how to get better salaries. And you can ask me any questions you want over there. And once again, thanks for listening and stay in touch.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.